Get it going now. Good. And I'll just do a couple of other Zoom sort of tips before we settle in. So if you can look at it in two different ways, depending on if you're looking at this on a phone or a tablet or a computer. The instructions are slightly different, but generally there's two different views. One is called speaker view, which is just seeing the one speaker, whoever's speaking, which is probably me at this moment. And the other is gallery view, which I have because I can see a big grid of people. So either of those is fine, whatever you prefer. Mostly I'll be muting. People will be muted unless you're asking a question or making a comment. So unmute yourself or just wave if you don't know how to do that or just isn't working or whatever. Let me know. There's also a chat function, so I'll be using that a bit as well later on. I'll explain that later. So that's a way of sending messages to me and also kind of communicating with each other as well. It becomes a kind of whiteboard for us in our call. People may be joining us sort of late, so we'll bear that in mind as well as we go through. I think that's everything. Any Zoom questions before we technical ones before we carry on? Okay, good. So I like to start everything I do, every workshop, course, day, seminar with just a bit of arriving time. If you like, you could frame that like just saying hello to yourself. So we're going to spend a bit of time doing that, a couple of minutes, and I will be leading us in that. And you feel free to ignore what I say and do your own thing, but use it as an opportunity to just arrive a bit in the present. Yep, good. So you can be standing, be sitting. I don't mind how you are. There's no fixed way, really. It's about being present, not kind of having a special experience. You might close your eyes. I'm just resting ahead of you, but beginning to take your awareness inside. Actually, not even inside. Take your awareness to your sense of contact with whatever you're sitting on or standing on. So, with the helpful anchor point to take your awareness, there's the chair, there's the floor, there's the back. And wherever you can feel that weight, not far away, is the ground, even if you're on a tower block or something. Actually, not far away underneath that is the ground. So, sensing that big kind of landscape around you, of the land, wherever you are in it. Noticing it and just sensing it through that sense of gravity and contact. And then notice the rest of your skin, your clothes, the shape of your body. And from there, maybe just noticing your breath, that sense of in your body right now, in the chest, in the middle, always all that in there. And just acknowledging how it is right now. Maybe there's all sorts of feelings in there. Maybe it's quite quiet. Maybe there's one thing kind of burning inside of you, some kind of thing in your life. Or maybe it's hard to sense your body at all. Just thoughts, and that's okay. Let all that be there. So everything is welcome. You don't have to be a special way to be here on this call or be here in any way at all. You are welcome as you are. Particularly inviting you to welcome anything in you that might be uncertain or trepidatious, scared even. special place for that. So I'll just leave another half a minute and I'll end with a short piece of a poem. So this is from a poem by David White, Start Close In. Just one verse from that poem. Start right now. Take a small step you can call your own. Don't follow someone else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't mistake that other for your own. So, are you ready? Finishing, opening your eyes, looking around the space you're in. Even if it's really familiar, would you recommend that? I'll say more about that at the end, about movement. Okay, so welcome to those who joined in the call. Just a brief overview of what we're going to be exploring tonight. Well, it's a big topic. As I was preparing this talk, I thought, wow, this is really huge. Of course, there are books written on this topic, fear. And there's so many different lenses through which you could look at it from. So we're just looking at what if this was a kind of, I don't know, a big table. We're looking at just one corner of it tonight. And really, we're looking about, well, looking at transforming it, but transforming it through a particular lens, and that's through relationship. So we're looking at how we can transform through fear or transform our experience of it through changing our relationship to it. And this is one of the principles really of focusing, which is where much of this comes from, the practice of focusing, which is, you know, I guess it's something about the interconnectedness of experience. When you shift something in yourself, whatever you're exploring changes too. It's like sometimes we think, oh, if I change, if only that would go away, that thing, then everything would be okay. But I mean, sometimes that happens, doesn't it? It's like, oh, wow, it's gone. Great, I feel better. But sometimes it's more like if we shift our relationship to it, our experience of it, it's like it shifts as well. So that's it, because it is connected. And of course, fear in us is in our experience. It's a very bodily, very real experience. So we begin to shift our relationship. It will feel different. It will transform. So we're going to look at how to get bigger than our fears. Also what our fear wants, or what our fears want for us. We'll look at leaning into it a little bit and maybe end with some tips around all that. So there may be some questions. Please, if you want to pause me and ask a question, you can do that either through asking it speaking or put it through the chat. That's fine. So I've got an oath. We're going to start with a question, really. I'm going to invite some experience from you. Just the question is, what is your relationship with fear, right, in your life at the moment? What is your relationship with fear, if you could discuss? As a guest, you could say, use this image. As a guest, is it welcome in your experience? Or does something else happen? Just a little bit about your own sense of it in your landscape. And you can feel free to answer with speaking or chat. So we might need a while to feel into that. How do I relate to fear? So yeah, have a think and then let's share through chatting or speaking. Just open the chat here. Hi, I'll unmute you, okay?
Hello.
Hi, welcome. Hi.
Thank you. I'm Georgia. I'm sorry for my English. Maybe my pronunciation is very Greek.
Okay. You're welcome as you are, but please, yeah, carry on.
My relationship with with fear is very, we have a very close relationship.
Mm-hmm.
From when I was very young, from my childhood, I had a very, a grandmother that, she learned me that fear is something that I have to feel it, let's say.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also, there was a like an expression in Greek, like the person who has a fear, his mother never cried. Like whoever has fear in his life feels the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's very careful, so the mother doesn't cry.
All right. That's okay. Nothing
is happening to him.
Yeah.
Okay, the last year I can say that after something that happened to me, again I have fear, like a very vague. I cannot understand what is it about sometimes.
Yeah.
And it started a little with the buses and the trains, but right. Not panic attacks, like I can say, like a fear, a general fear of something.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Carry on. Was there more?
I'm sorry?
Was there more? Was that, or I thought I might have interrupted you.
Yeah. I didn't understand. Maybe
did I interrupt your flow?
No, not at all. Yeah. I think this is it, and I would like to learn how to deal with it, because in the beginning I was very against it. I was going against the fear, like I don't want to get to feel the fear. I want to be fearless and all of this. And then I found out, because okay, I am also a psychologist and I am working with these things, that it works better if I am in touch with my this part of me that feels the fear.
Mm.
And but from the other side, I never can say that I am like relaxed as I would like to be.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm. So Matt,
there's much in what you're saying there, and I want to really reflect back how sometimes, and this is relevant to everyone, sometimes we don't know why we're afraid, why that feeling is flowing through us. Sometimes we do, yeah, and but much of the time we don't, and we might touch on this, but I don't actually think it matters in terms of this approach so much, or it's not the central thing. But yeah, but it sounds like you have you've learned some way of that it's healthy to relate to it, or have it to feel it a little, which is great. Although sometimes we push it away, we don't like it also, so we'll be exploring that. Thank you. Yeah, anything else? You've got room for another one or two. It could be just a sentence or something short also here. Just something about your relationship to fear.
Maybe I didn't get it. And you were speaking to me.
Oh, everybody. No, sorry, everybody. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. Sorry, yeah.
Thank you.
Or even I could have said, do you welcome it? Is it something you welcome or something you have some other response to? Yeah, thank you. Great. So I'm assuming if a chat pops up and it's to everyone, well, it is public because you've got it, but you can also chat to me privately and I can just read it anonymously. But so yeah, try to avoid it. That's right. We do. This is what I spent years being afraid of being afraid. So we'll come to that in a minute. Exactly. Juliet. Oh, I'll just unmute you. Great.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
I was struck by my answer to the question about my relationship with fear, and it's very aversive.
Mm-hmm.
I actually realised that I feel controlled by it.
Right, yeah.
And angry with it. So it's definitely a relationship of sort of trying to keep it out, away from it. And it's a consequence, feeling it a lot.
Mm, right. Yeah. No, thank you for your. Yeah. It can be powerful. Mm. All those parts of us that feel it can be powerful. We'll look, you know, can have a grip on our life. So yeah, thank you for being open about that. Mm. Yeah, one more, Helen. Just a little snapshot. I'm just kind of gathering a lot of flavour really of this, and then we'll move on.
Just by the question, I realized that I think of it almost as a lining for nearly everything.
Like, yeah.
That it's there, and I thought that, you know, you're told to accept it, so you're like, yeah, I accept it. But there's that kind of, I realize in reflection that it's like something there that you just try and push past, like, oh, you're there again.
Yeah.
And try and shove it out of the way.
Yeah.
So it's not really acknowledging it, yeah, but, you know, why are you here again? You know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It isn't really acceptance, is it?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's right. It's exactly like that. It's like an unwelcome visitor in our guest house, to use that image. It's like, oh no, that's again. And we think we shouldn't. I mean, there's so much gets laid around it. We think we shouldn't feel afraid, or we're a failure because we feel afraid. I'm not saying you're saying this, but these are kind of the stories I ended up feeling. Oh, I can't do something unless, like, I have to get rid of my fear and then I can act, you know. All of those stories are pretty unhelpful, really. So this is all about relationships. So I'm going to move into that a bit more. So thank you, as you've spoken. Yeah. So it's generally not something we welcome. And even something we feel like can control us, always very powerful. Now, I just want to draw a little distinction here between, I guess, like the fear that's in our life because, I don't know, you're seeing a car come towards you, or something actually threatening and dangerous, and a very natural response that's very, you know, like what your body is designed to do. I mean, there's lots you'd say about that, but let's put that aside. I'm talking more about a fear that is like, wow, I'm afraid of this. Like, that's really difficult for me. I was limiting some part of your life, or you can't find a place for it, or it's really restricting something in you, but you're not your life. So just to make that kind of distinction, really. Yeah. Welcome, somebody just arrived.
Hello.
Hi, Catherine. Hey, welcome. Great.
Thank you. Just got in at the last minute.
Okay, yeah, just snipped in. That's fine. So I want to talk about getting bigger than our fear. So I'm going to give you two sentences. Now, those who've been on my workshops and seminars will know this already. I'm going to give you two sentences to say in your own inside space, sort of drop them into you, and for you, invite you to feel the difference, saying it one way and saying it another way. It should make sense when I do it. So all you need to do, yeah, just get comfortable, take a few breaths. Let's just do that. And it's like you're getting this exercise about just getting a flavor of it, how words affect experience. So firstly, inviting you to say to yourself, I feel afraid. I feel afraid. And just notice the kind of flavor of it, what it sets up in you. Even the word carries something. I feel afraid. But if you can, just notice the feeling of it. And then change that to something in me feels afraid. Something in me feels afraid. I'm noticing something in me that feels afraid. So changing from I feel afraid to something in me feels afraid. And get a feel for each one, play around with it, see if there's a difference when you say it. So just leave it for quiet for a moment. just typing this sentence out as we finish. So I'm noticing something in me which feels afraid. So yeah, tell me how you sense the difference between that. I feel afraid and I'm noticing something in me feels afraid. If you noticed that. Was there a qualitative difference? Maybe they felt the same. It's okay. Oh, Mari, just unmute you. There we go.
I feel afraid feels much scarier than something in me feels afraid. Because if there's only something in me that feels afraid, by implication, there's something in me that doesn't feel afraid.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of implies something, doesn't it? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. Yeah. Great. Anything else? Notice something similar or a bit different or even physically? Anything's welcome here. George, are you trying? I can't see. Are you showing us something there? I'll unmute you. You might be better to. Oh, I think one went to work. Can you try and unmute yourself for me? Ah, great.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was a movement that I could, if it was better. I feel afraid. I had like a movement here, like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Loss of balance, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that. Mm-hmm.
Something in me feels afraid. It was like this was stopping.
Yeah, okay.
All of this.
Yeah, yeah. So it just kind of quietened that movement down, and stopped it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Hi.
Hi. After you.
No, I said welcome. You can carry on.
Me or Therese?
I'll go.
Yeah, I think it's just. Who's speaker? Yeah, sorry, Therese.
I was just noticing how when the phrase "I'm afraid" made me feel much smaller, and kind of more overwhelmed by it, and almost like a kid. Whereas the other one, I'm not sure. I didn't feel that way. I'm not sure what I felt, but I didn't feel that way.
Right. Yeah. So some difference. But hard to describe, maybe, but not like a kid so much. Would that doesn't?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah. Sometimes it's subtle, and that's okay. Yeah. Great. Someone else, Carol, was exactly what. Yeah. Great. So that's similar. Yeah.
I've typed it. Very similar. With the first one, I felt really small, and like the rest of the world was really big.
Right.
I related to what Theresa said, but
yeah.
And with the second one, it felt like there was something small in me that maybe I could take care of.
Yeah.
I still felt full size.
Yeah, that's great. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, something that you can take care of. It very much brings in, well, for some at least, these words, or at least the kind of idea of it. Maybe not the words, but. Brings into awareness like this sense of we can be with it. We can be with that part of us that's scared. Great. Anything, anyone else? One last person to speak and then I'll just add to what we've been looking at. So I want to just demonstrate this visually. So if those of you who would be listening after this won't see it because it'll just be audio, but those of you are seeing it now. So I want to just give you a visual image for this shift from identification and therefore feeling maybe small or powerless or overwhelmed, or it's like all of us, to being with it, to relationship. Such a crucial movement. that focusing, for me at least, focusing gave me this, like, really so clearly, and I'm forever grateful for it. So this is a little lemur animal, just a small toy for those who can't see it. This is something, actually, I bought this because I saw it in an airport in on the way to Ireland. And it was the last one in the shop. And it was like, oh, wow, that's what I feel like most of the time. I feel like this small and this scared. So, right, I'm having you, and you're going to be joining me in my workshops from now on. And this is the scared part of me. So that's kind of why I got it. So this is a movement from I feel scared and putting it like near my face, as it were, like in front of me, like seeing out through its eyes. And it feels like it's all of me. Like, it's all of me. It really, even now, as I say that I feel scared, I can feel it as a big thing in my body. And then something in me feels scared. Then it's different. There's a bit of space. I can begin to kind of disidentify, to use that kind of technical language somehow, but kind of feel bigger than it, like some of you have reported. And then I can begin to listen, notice it, be curious about it. Such an important movement. This allows curiosity, allows relationship, and then from there, so many steps can come. If we're identified with it, it's not wrong. Like, it's not like you're a bad person to be identified with it, but it's just harder to get a sense of it. It's harder to hear its story. It's harder to work with it, to use that kind of language. It's just, but when we feel like it's part of us, then we can begin to form a relationship, and then it can begin to move. The relationship can change. Does that make sense, that image? I'm sure it does. Great. But I'm going to add one more piece here. Because sometimes we're not always curious, are we? When we feel scared, even if we go, oh, well, a part of me feels scared. As people, what other kinds of reactions might we give to ourselves if we're scared that aren't really accepting and curious? What might we say to ourselves when we're scared, which is not accepting? Some example. Like a not, what about, what would be a not accepting? What would you say to yourself when you're scared that isn't very accepting? Yeah, great. Shouldn't be feeling scared. Let's look at that. So then we have something else to acknowledge. I'm pathetic. Yeah, exactly. Something judging, or you shouldn't. So then we have another animal. And again, I've got a kind of troll here. So something in me, I'm noticing something in me that's scared. Oh, God, I hate it. I wish it would go away. You know, that's often how we are. We're like, we're identified with this part. Oh, God, I hate it. I'm pathetic. You should be over this by now. Ooh, dropped it. Then it makes it hard to be curious, obviously, because we've got this judging going on. Like, we shouldn't be scared. That sounds quite nice. Shouldn't be scared. So there are something else in me, another thing in me, something else. So important. Something else in me is judging it. Or hating it. Or scared of it. You know, you have two scareds. I'm scared, and so I'm scared of feeling scared. That could be going on, couldn't it? Okay, now I can make room for both. Something in me scared, and something else in me hates it, wants it to go away. This gives us room to get even bigger. Very often I get stuck in this kind of way, like, I'm scared and I don't want to feel it, or part of me scared and I don't want to feel it. So, but now I can go, oh, something else in me doesn't want to feel it. And I've got something in me that's scared. So I can be with both, be curious about both. I'll say more about the next step in a minute, but I just want to check that kind of makes sense. Acknowledging the other reactions we have around something that's scared, some part of us is scared, can really ease the whole picture. Right. Any questions about it? Good. So I want to just take a talk a bit more about these parts, working with parts really in a focusing way. This all comes from focusing. This is a body-based approach to listening to your inner wisdom. Listening to that kind of rightness, that sense inside, that knowing we have, and whenever we, well, what was noticed in that whole practice is many parts of us can come into awareness when we do that. So lots of education and kind of knowledge and learning came about from that. Oh, who do we meet when we turn inside and notice ourselves? Yeah. So when we find ourselves with a part of us that's scared, what do we do? Well, I've kind of implied it already. We listen to it. Yeah, we listen to it just as I are. Let it. This is obviously takes time to practice. This is something that isn't necessarily something you can just get straight away. But yeah, something scared, and I'm wondering what you might be scared of. You might let it show you, or tell you. It may show you in pictures, in focusing, but let it show you, or tell you what it's scared of. Yeah, you may not say anything, but you offer it space, right, to do that. And notice as you do that, what can happen is other parts trying and convince it to feel differently. You're like, no, no, it's okay. You're not scared, really. You know, these are different kinds of parts, not critical, but like it's still kind of dampening down and not really listening. So this is a really key bit of focusing, is really listening to something just as it is, or creating a strong enough container to do that, to listen to that part of us. Let it, bless you. Someone there. let it tell you what it's scared of, or show you, or say something about it. It may not, but keep it company. Yeah. Ultimately, these parts of us, yeah, they want us to not experience something. They want to protect us from something happening to us in some way. We may not be able to articulate it, but they have a kind of motive for us. This is really very much embedded in focusing theory. The parts of us, these parts, want something for us, or we don't want something for us. They're trying to. So parts of us often, the scared parts, are trying to prevent us from having some bad experience that they think will happen if such and such goes ahead. Or so we're really trying to get in this way of relating, in this empathic way of relating, of listening, of giving it space, really sensing for what it wants for us, or what it doesn't want for us, what it wants to save us from, even. Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. All parts of us that we have, they want something for us, or they want to protect us from something, the opposite, if you like. All of them are trying to save us in a way, all these parts of us. You could look at it in that language. But yeah, hearing them, creating a container strong enough so we can hear them just as they are. This is a real key. Where we're not trying to reassure it, not trying to make it feel different. We just go, okay, yeah, you're really scared of that. And this is really too tricky. This is tricky in real life, right? I've got eight-year-old son. And he's just like 10 minutes before this call, because he's on his own watching TV, he's like, I'm scared, Daddy. And it's so easy to go, well, you know, don't be scared. But I did that eventually, because I did fall into the habit. But I said, oh, okay, right, you're scared. You're worried about something. Do you want to maybe let me know what you're worried about? And he told me what he's worried about. And then I did get to reassuring. Maybe it's okay if it's 8-year-old. I don't know. I just said, okay, well, if you need me, I'm here. So you know, there's this delicate balance, that whole reassurance thing. But don't go straight in there with it. Listening to that part of us that's scared. Let it show you. I'll just pause there because there may be some questions about this and what parts of us are scared, and if this makes sense or anything. Also, please feel free to go, hang on a minute, I'm not sure about this, and what about this? Bring all those things in. Or chat your question, that's also fine. Mari, I just unmute.
Yeah, I'm just remembering something that happened a long time ago, because you were talking about your son. And I was just remembering a little boy I used to look after, and I was babysitting him. And I could see that he just got into bed and I could see that he was unhappy about something. And I asked him what it was and he said he was scared. And I said, oh, what are you scared of? And he said, I'm scared that mummy won't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know whether to say, oh, don't worry, she'll definitely come back. But then what if she didn't, you know, there's a possibility that she might not have come back and then I would have spoken wrong kind of thing. So I didn't really know how to handle it, to be honest. I can't quite remember now what I did say, but I remember the dilemma at the time. Just from what you said about your son.
That's right. And it's very much the same inside of us in a way. It's there's some balance there between, I think listening is really important, acknowledging, okay, that's what you feel. You're scared of this, you know. And you're the big, you know, in a way, there is something implied here. This, you're the big person who's sort of in focusing, who knows other stuff. That small part of you, maybe a child in you, is like, but maybe they won't come back, has a different perspective. So just be with it. Let it say its fears. But we can also do that at the same time as knowing it'll be okay. Or mostly will probably be okay. We don't.
Well, hoping.
Hoping, exactly, yeah. But I suppose often what I notice is often I when I was scared, I came in very quickly with a kind of, well, either there was a lot of aversion to it, like I don't want to feel it. So once you get past that, then it's like trying to kind of make it all okay really quickly. Well, this is okay, and it's okay, and a kind of panicky trying to settle it, either like because it was so unpleasant to be scared. Do anything to make it go away. So this is where this listening comes in. And then when something feels really heard, when that scared part of us feels really heard, then it's much more likely to settle down. It sort of, once it feels like it's somebody's got its back and it's there with it. Yeah. So I want to just say a bit more about parts. I'll just point to some interesting things from focusing just in this whole realm of parts that are scared. So I want to introduce very, very briefly this idea of safety guardians. So these are kind of, this is just my way of languaging it. You might have come across something similar, even in other models, you know, parts of us that are trying to protect us. I'm calling them safety guardians. Now, in the model I'm drawing this from, safety guardians are parts that are trying to protect us. They're very silent. They're like the parts of us that take us to the fridge, if this is your thing, or whatever it is for you, that to make you not feel something. They've got the keys to your body. Which is what I'm describing. They can take over and like, right, you're not going to feel this. I'm going to take you to whatever it is, the phone, the fridge, drink, and we're not feeling. So there's a part of us. This is like a part of us that really wants to keep us safe, and it will take over, literally take over your body. I mean, it sounds like a weird way of putting it, really, but like it gets in a driving seat and off it goes, does its thing, and you feel like sometimes like, God, I swore I wouldn't do that again. You know, I said, oh, I'm definitely not going to have any more food to eat. But, you know, but bam, there you are. So that's introducing this kind of part of us called a safety guardian. Again, it's on our side. It's trying to help us. It's trying to save our life, even though it has very limited way of responding and really deeply caught in habit. But it is trying to save our life, and it's scared. Right? It doesn't want us to experience something that it considers bad. Again, that's something we can, over time, come into a relationship with. It's a particular kind of scared part. Another one of my favorites, just to end with this, in this piece on parts, is the part of us, what I call a catastrophizer. This is the part of us that will show you horror movies and horrible things happening. And graphically, sometimes through images. And it's like, oh, that's like another kind of safety guard. It's like, I'm going to show you how horrible it's going to be just so you don't do it. So you get pictures of, I get pictures of my son getting killed or my dog getting run over, whatever it is. You know, it's like vivid images come to me and I'm like, oh, okay. And they can be quite horrible, but now I understand those as a part of me. It's a part of me that doesn't have words, but it can show me pictures of what it doesn't want to happen. I don't want this. I don't want my dog to get squashed. So it'll show me that. and it can, you know, physically it can be a bit affecting, you know, but if I know it's just a part of me showing me that, showing me the catastrophe, like, okay, thank you, that's all right, I've got it, I've got the message. It's kind of got a survival function in it. So don't take it literally. This is where we can get tangled, and I used to get quite tangled with this. It's by kind of then pushing those things away. That's horrible, I don't want it, I don't want that picture, and then I get into a big fight with myself. And now, okay, that's what part of me is showing me this horrible thing, it doesn't want to happen. So pause there. That's a catastrophizer and the fridge monster. Safety guardian parts of us that take us to find some way for us not to feel, to keep safe. So just introduce those.
So Peter?
Yeah, please, Maury.
What's the catastrophizer up to then?
Well, it's showing us what it doesn't want to happen.
Is it saying to you, you better make sure you look after the dog, or you better make sure you look after your son?
Oh, yeah, I don't know if it's more like to how I understand it and conceptualize it and sense it even, is like, I don't want this to happen. It's just something in me that goes, I don't want this to happen. And the effect of it might be that I do take better care, but and maybe it's trying to make me do that, I suppose. So it could be possible. But often they're like, but I'm nowhere near a car, you know. It's like it's not relevant even.
Yeah.
So just to understand it as that scared part of it is showing me what it doesn't want to happen. That makes sense. That helps me make sense of it.
Right.
Yeah. But sometimes I do think, oh, okay, no, I do need to take care here, actually. It does give me a, like, it's a good warning. Like, I take the practical piece out of it. Like, all right, okay, yeah. Let's put my dog on a lead now. Or so there could be a practical dimension to it. So thanks for drawing that out. But if it comes in, but this, you know, for example, it might come the night before something. I'm not even in the situation, right? And the part of me showing me how awful it's going to be the next day. Well, I'm okay. Actually, there yet? It's like, so then I can have a way of relating to it, I suppose. Yeah. Something in me showing me what it doesn't want to happen.
In my experience, the feeling of fear is one of the worst things that you can feel. Mm. I don't think I've felt anything that is as horrible as fear.
Yeah. It is. I think that's right. I mean, depending on its level of strength, but you know, when you feel it strongly, absolutely. I mean, even in a small way, it's unpleasant, but when it's really strong, when we get to terror, you know, let's say, that's really horrible. So, yeah,
it's the worst ever. It's the pits.
Yeah. So I will talk about the physiology in a minute. So I just want to say something about leaning into it, which is when it's not too strong. So we'll come back to when it's strong in a minute, or when we have to maybe work differently with it. But when we feel like we've got some kind of relationship, we can begin to lean into it a bit. And by leaning into it, I mean we can begin to play a little bit and take and sort of not have it limit our life. And this is really about finding a place of practice, I could say. Finding a place where we can, to use that overused phrase, feel the fear and do it anyway, right? Carry the fear with you. So I've got a blog post about this if you look up on my website. So this is about being big enough. You're bigger than it, but and you're doing something that's a bit scary for it or for many parts. But you're taking some small steps into that scary situation and carrying it with you, looking after it. And one of the ways we can practice this successfully without kind of rebounding off something is by finding small steps. So I'll give you an example of this, which is around for me, which is at the moment something I'm working on exploring, is I'm wanting to get involved in activism around environmental concerns. There's a lot of people I know doing that and being quite courageous and willing to put their livelihoods even on the line. You know, whether that cause is you're interested in or not, it doesn't really matter, but it's more like doing something which part of me feels scared of. Like, I don't like confrontation at all. I hate it. Something in me hates it. Even saying it. And the idea of just suddenly going out there, right, okay, I'm going to get myself arrested, just feels too confrontational. So I'm giving myself bits away, way of feeling some of that situation without doing it all. So I might be, okay, I'll watch some documentaries about the whole issue, about environmental challenges. And then maybe I'll talk to people who are doing activism, talk about their experiences. And then last week, I went to a workshop on how to do some of this stuff. So I wasn't even doing it, right? I was giving myself steps. Even going to that workshop, the kind of training on it, scared me. You know, we did role plays, and we had to pretend to be a policeman, and settle that fear for my body. But anyway, nothing big was at stake. So it's great. It gives your body a chance to practice, to feel some of those feelings and not be overwhelmed by them, potentially. So find a little place of practice. Find a social valuable way of looking at things. So small steps. If you can. I mean, sometimes life just throws something at us and we don't get any chance to practice whatsoever. Please, let's acknowledge that. We can't control this. But if we can give ourselves a place of practice where we move into the fear a bit, or take the fear with us, do something we're a little bit scared of, then we can begin to build this capacity to meet it. And then it won't be so limiting in our life. But my life, that's how I've experienced it. But just pausing around that piece. So making small steps. So that's about carrying this part with you that's scared. Actually went to a meeting recently, a kind of gathering that I was scared of. I put this character in my pocket. No one knew it was there, but I knew it was there. So it's like, okay, I'm going to literally take this with me. And that seemed to help. So any questions on what I've said there? So lastly, I just want to share some tips around working with the physiology of fear, because it's a huge topic. You could do 2 hours, 2 weeks on this. Well, and the somatic experiencing training that I did, which is a 3-year course. Really, I mean, in a way, you're just circulating around this whole topic of fear and terror all the time. So there's so much there, but I want to share a few little choice tips that have really helped me in my relating to fear and working with it. Sort of, and really around physiology, around using our awareness and our bodies to help support being with it. So the first one is using awareness. So fear and the experience of fear, by definition, in a way, narrows our field of attention to what's most scary. Kind of, thankfully, right? You know, if you're getting chased by a tiger in the jungle or a bear or something, your attention wants to be exactly where that tiger is or that bear is, so you can run and jump and get out of the way. So your whole awareness will shift like to very narrow focus, which at a time is very, very important, because it gets us out of the way or whatever. It might save your life. But that response, that kind of narrowing of awareness when fear comes up in us, isn't always helpful when it's coming up in the way I'm speaking about. It can really limit our attention and really overwhelm us when we don't need to be, when there's no actual real threat. So noting, I'm just going to say this like this, take your awareness to what feels good or okay or least bad in your experience. So you might notice fear in you, something in you that feels afraid, use that language. And then notice in your body, where do you feel least scared or where feels most okay? Oh, actually my head feels okay, or my eyes, or my fingers, my feet feel all right. Okay, oh, it feels okay. When I look at that tree, I feel a sense of calm. When I look at that tree, my breathing changes. So it might not be an inner experience. It might be. So what in your experience feels okay? So this is called resourcing or grounding, very familiar in many modalities. So taking awareness to what feels good, what feels okay. It's a great thing for working when you're getting overwhelmed in the moment. So don't forget the least bad. So don't look for what's good, because that could really, really trip you up. Look for what's least bad. Second one, movement. Fear really often gets stuck together with immobility like this incapacity to move. Physiologically, that's tricky, of course. So the more movement we have, the more resources we have. So simply, if we find ourselves getting afraid, move a little, particularly moving your head and your neck, because that actually stimulates parts of your vagus nerve, which is a part of a nervous system physiology, which creates safety. So looking around. Something in me feels scared. So do this at the same time as saying that. Something in me is scared. You know, look around, wiggle your toes, wiggle your hands. So bring a bit of movement. Really nice. It's the opposite of it's readiness in a way. It's alert, you know. Obviously, don't go manic about that. That would be probably putting it too much. But just some gentle movements, looking around, like I say. The movement can be very facilitative. So that's tip number two. The third one would be really social connection and contact. If you can find, of course, you can't always get this, but if you can find another mammal to relate to, it may not be a human, right? It might be a dog or a cat, even a mouse. I don't ever tried it with that, but find some connection. Stroke your pet. Look at your pet. If you have someone nearby, make contact with them and say, "Hi, I'm really scared. Or can you just be with me for a bit?" You know, the people who are most resilient and survive, if you like, get less symptoms from trauma are those who've sought out support immediately after the event and had found good support, so helpful in that processing experience. But literally that sense of connection and looking, you know, we're completely hardwired to get our safety through connection with other people. One little story I'll share with you. I was in Clifton in Bristol on a conference, and we went to look at the bridge. And I haven't ever been afraid of, well, I say it's only in my last 10 years, 5-10 years, I started to get afraid of heights, like properly, really. I do not like it. Some part of my physiologically, my legs start to just go really wobbly, and I start to feel sick. And I'm like, well, I don't know why that happened. Anyway, we went to the bridge to have a look, lovely view, and I'm absolutely terrified. Like, I can't get near the edge, my legs are just freaking out. So I said to my friend, can I just hold your hand? Well, I think I just said, can I stand next to you? And as soon as I stood next to her and felt my contact with her, my whole system calmed down, like from 10 to 2. And I took a step away, wham, it just went straight back up. And I just played with it. It's like, wow, this is incredible. That sense of contact through the physiology actually made me feel safe. Yeah, and that's, of course, why kids want to hold your hand. You know, that's why... Well, my dog's scared, she comes running to me. You know, this kind of very basic mammalian way of gaining safety through connection. Really use it, so helpful. So yeah, to recap on those, awareness, movement, and connection, contact. Got a minute of questions about any of that stuff. So that's just working in the moment with it. Anything to ask or say? Yeah, Juliet, I'll just unmute.
I think it works when the connection is kind of like this, you know, not in person, not with the person or the dog.
Yeah, it does work. You're saying, well, was that a question? I think.
Yeah, it was a question.
Does it work?
Yeah.
Yeah, because voice is really important in this. I mean, I don't think it's necessary. It depends on the person, and I wouldn't say it always works, but certainly having... You know, I do work one-to-one online with people, and it's very different. If there was no one there, you know, they're hearing the voice, you know, that tone of voice, an empathic tone of voice, somebody listening, and their presence, not just their voice, that's very powerful to physiology. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think having someone in the room is even better, probably. But, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's a good question, yeah. I was at a talk on this, and lecturer was showing her pictures of mammals, you know, like seals and cows, looking at you, and you know, just even pictures of mammals, right, actually affected people's nervous systems. So it's really interesting. So I'm aware of time. Just a bit of a recap. So we've looked. well, really shifting our relationship with something in us that's afraid. So from fear to something in us that feels afraid, and that whole movement. And looked at also exploring parts of us that might be reacting to the fear too. Some parts of us are judging it, welcoming those. We looked at keeping an empathy with parts of us, really listening to what parts of us are scared of. Touched on safety guardian, small steps, leaning into to fear, giving ourselves a place of practice. And we looked at some tips of working with the physiology to support ourselves when we do get scared. That might help bring our system into more regulation, let's say, feel calmer, easier. So that is coming to a close. Just something about what next. I've got a introductory course coming up on the 29th. So it's a couple of weeks' time. It's 2 weeks' time. So it's a 5-week course online. We learn some of these skills from focusing and a lot more. We're learning how to really come into relationship with all sorts of different parts of ourselves and accessing, and through that accessing the kind of wisdom within them and that inner wisdom we have within us, learning how to accompany someone else. So it's not just a one-way thing. So yeah, if you're interested in that, look online on my website, and I'll be sending out the link to that course soon. There's also a discount for anyone who's registered for the seminar, so you'll get to hear that, £25 off. And I'll be probably doing other seminars too in this year. I like to do them, fairly regularly, really, just on different topics around this. Any last minute questions before we finish? I'm going to end with that poem again, and another verse of it, which I'm just going to pull up. But while I do that, just any questions or comments or... Hi, Mari.
Just an observation. Mm. I used to think when I was young that the older I got, the less scared I would get and the braver I would get. And I found that's not the case at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like, you can get scared of things, when you're quite old that you were never scared of before. For instance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the landscape changes. That's right. Thank you. And just remind you, if you've spoken on the call and you don't want that on the recording, please let me know afterwards. I won't be posting it till tomorrow. So you've got between it tonight and tomorrow to think about that. We'll end with this last two verses from this poem. This great poem, Start Close In by David White, a wonderful poem about taking small steps. And so I'll end with that. Start right now. Take a small step you can call your own. Don't follow someone else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't mistake that other for your own. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing. Close in. The step you don't want to take. Okay. So goodbye. Thanks for joining me. And yep, any questions, get back to me. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.